Now, this week we are continuing our series on the questions that Jesus asked. I mean, we're in a season of questions. You're learning about me. I have questions about you, not that you're questionable, right? But there's things that, you know, we're just kind of discovering about each other. And in the midst of this, I'm kind of sharing a little bit about myself. And, you know, individually, you've been kind of coming by or sort of working through conversations with me. And that's been a lovely thing. Thank you so very much. We'll continue to do this through the summer as we are working our way forward. The leadership and staff are getting together at the end of this month to do an onboarding session with folks from the district, facilitated by the district, to kind of help me sort of with questions, to help them with questions about me and that sort of thing. So we're in this. It's a season of questions. And so today we continue. Now, one question that you may have about me, given my rugged exterior. Bert, are you a hunter? And I can tell you, I am not a hunter. I love to be outside. It's a wonderful thing. But where I grew up, if your father hunted, then the sons hunted, or the daughters increasingly. But my father would not have anything to do with a gun, so there we are. But I like to fish. I'm an intermittent fisher. I'm a fisherman. I'm not a particularly good one, but I like being outside. Now, most of my fishing was on the bank of some river or some lake or a shore somewhere, but occasionally I would go out on a boat. Some of you have done that. People, yeah, there you go. Now, really kind of my first time in a boat, I was with a family member who invited me to come along with him. We were going to do kind of overnight fishing. And so we got into this really kind of nice fishing boat, you know, all this shiny. And it was candy apple blue. Y'all remember candy apple, right? It's not even a color. It's like flecks of confetti or something inside there. But it was just this sleek, beautiful kind of like wonderful boat. And so we got into it and we went out into different places. He showed me his fish finder, which is like sonar for fish. It's wild, you know. So we were looking at the fish and the sun came down. And as long as we were kind of moving along pretty quickly, I might add, but we were moving along, everything seemed to be great. Having a good time, life was good. And then we pulled into a cove and found ourselves, kind of not far from land, but, you know, far enough. And we lowered lanterns over the gunwales down into the water, or into the surface of the water, which attracted the bugs. And the bugs brought in the small fish, and the small fish brought what? Whoa, and there were some monsters in there. You could see, I mean, you could look down on light and you could see them just kind of like working their way across the bottom, which, you know, it was exciting. And so I am there, and in a while, I started to notice the water in the bottom of the boat. Now, it's a boat, you know, there's... So there, it's a boat, and water splashes into the boat, right? When you step in and out of a boat, you bring a certain amount with you. And so it's not unusual. Those of you who have been inside watercraft like that, you know that water gets in. But sometimes it gets in a little faster than you want it to. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm, you know, trying to concentrate on fishing. And I look down and I see that there is surprisingly more water in the boat than the last time I looked. Now, in my mind, I had to kind of make sense of that. because I'm not really terribly familiar with this, and I am trying to not embarrass myself in front of my family member, but I'm also trying to, like, not die. and that is where my mind went. I swear to you, I remembered scenes from the Poseidon Adventure. You remember that? That movie is 150 years old, and I, Ernest Borgnine in the Upside Down, And, you know, Titanic had not come out, the movie Titanic had not come out, but I was playing through scenes of that before it even came out. Because, you know, there's a part of your mind, there's a part of you that looks at those things that are in front of you and go, this could kill you. And you know what? That's not necessarily a terrible thing. The reason why we have fear responses is because there are things out in the world that would love to eat you, to kill you, and to make fun of you later on. Right. There's a part of the brain called the amygdala, and there's some other systems kind of at work in the midst of all that too, that look at those situations and start to assess, is this dangerous or not? And if it is dangerous, what's it going to mean for me? And now, sometimes that is a great thing because it keeps us, it kept us from being eaten by lions and other things across history. Or, you know, that group of people over there, they seem dangerous. They're smiling at me, but I don't know. You know, so this fear response is not necessarily a bad thing, but it also can run amok. And that's what it started to do in my mind as I sat there and I watched that water in my mind rise above my knees. You know, I knew it. Of course, it didn't. You know, but I knew it was going to happen. So I finally worked up the gumption to say to my family member, have you noticed that we have more water in here than when, you know, we did a half hour ago? And that family member smiled from ear to ear. He said, I don't worry about it if I have this. And he turned around, and I swear to you, he pulled out a metal coffee cup, dipped out a bunch of water, threw it over the side. And so I found the nearest cup myself, you know, and I'm like, it was the driest boat he had ever had. It was just great. But it was also a moment, you know, when I was faced with what the disciples were faced with, is this is dangerous. Now, in that passage that we heard that they're off in the boat. By the way, this particular passage is in three of the four Gospels, and is in Matthew, it's told twice. Pay attention, right? So it's told twice, and it is this moment where people, who many of them are experienced fishermen, are in a storm. So it is not just, you know, a few guys didn't know any better, like, you know, me, didn't know any better. No, these are folks that know what the danger is, know the stories of what has happened to people in the past, and their amygdala, their brain, is kind of saying, oh, this is something to work through. And their fear has taken hold. Their fear is in charge, and they're worried about what's going to happen next. So what do? They turn to their Lord. But at the same time, it seems like they're like coming to him who, depending on the version of the story, oftentimes he's like on a cushion asleep, you know. Let me just pause that for a second. Some people can sleep through storms. I'm one of those people that can do that. My wife cannot. And so if my wife cannot sleep through a storm, I don't sleep through a storm. And sometimes people come to us. And that's certainly what the disciples did. They came to Jesus and they said, "Don't you care that we're about to drown?" Now, what happens next? What happens next actually occurs so fast and so to the point, it's almost easy to miss. But let me kind of slow this down a little bit and kind of work through this with you, because what happens is Jesus gets up and he starts to talk. He doesn't like shut down the storm, right? That's kind of the place that he gets and the place that we kind of resolve to, right? I mean, that's ultimately, he gets up, he rebukes the wind. Have you seen, there's several famous kind of images of art where Jesus stands up in the boat and he says, "Peace, be still." Isn't that something? And we kind of long for those times when, you know, the Lord would kind of like in the middle of that storm, stand up and say, "Peace, be still," and it resolves everything, right? There's no need for fear. But that doesn't always happen. It certainly doesn't happen with the rapidity, with the speed at which it happens in here. Now, Jesus stands up and he says, "Why are you afraid?" That's the question of the week, right? Why are you afraid? And then he says, "You people of little faith, you people of weak, limited faith." And then he settles the storm down. The storm gets settled and they go, "Who is this guy? The wind, the lake, the storm even believes and follows what he says." Which is fascinating because, you know, those oftentimes for first century Hebrew people were also symbols of terrible chaos and danger. Even terrible chaos and danger listens to him and abides to what he says. If you look at the Bible and that particular passage, you will see Jesus doing all kinds of those sorts of things. He heals a man with a skin disease. He heals a centurion's servant. He heals a whole bunch of people. He has conversation about what you're supposed to do in following him, and then he calms the storm. After that, he frees a demon-possessed man. After that, he heals a man who's paralyzed. That's on two pages in the midst of all of this, and right at the heart of it is Jesus being confronted by that storm and saying, "I have control over you." But before he does that, he says, "Why are you afraid?" Now, it would almost be easy, and I do this too, just to kind of read that with the tone of Jesus sort of chastising them. You know, you almost sort of see the hands on the hips, right? And "You goofballs." That's my translation, by the way. "You goofballs." But we really don't know the tone, do we? Have you ever written an email or received an email that made you think, like, "That person is screaming at me," right? "They hate my guts by the way that they wrote the thing, and you don't hear the tone." That's one of the power, you know, one of the beautiful things about Zoom and other kind of things. I know Zoom's complicated, but at least you hear the tone of voice. At least you get a sense of the body language, right? So we don't have that. We have these words, and honestly, if we step outside of is Jesus chastising them or not, and just listen to the question, there's a lot in that question. And honestly, there's a lot in that question for us. Why are you afraid? I mean, think about that. What's driving this? What fear is bubbling up inside? What belief about how the world works and about how things are going to go bad is inside there? And is it true? You know, there's wonderful data from the University of Pennsylvania that the psychology folks there said Americans are freaked out. Have you noticed this? Americans have a lot of anxiety and a lot of fears. But if you ask people to list the things that they're afraid of, the probabilities of those things happening are very, very small. The things that are more likely to mess them up are not even on the list, right? So we have this way of worrying about things that are inconsequential or have the potential, but they become so big. Have you ever had this thing that you've had to do? Oh, I don't want to do that, right? Like a conversation you need to have or an email you needed to write, watch your tone, and something that, I don't want to do that because that person will think badly of me, or there will be this bad thing that will come of it. And then you go through and you do it, and it wasn't so bad. Anybody have that experience in here? Everyone raise your hand, right? Because I know you have, right? Sometimes it's worse than others, but this is part, and this is how fear works. It's helpful, but it can distort things to get it done. One of the things the psychologists learned a few years ago was that, you know, if you have somebody that's really, really afraid of something, say snakes, anybody snake lovers in here? Oh, okay, let me back away from that one. If you have something that you're concerned about, one of the ways of treating it is to expose, in a safe as possible way, expose that person. That's how they get people on airplanes, by the way. And the question along the line is, did you die? Did this kill you? No. All right, let's take another step. Do you see what I'm saying about fear? Fear is helpful, but it and something to maybe listen to, but to put it in context, to come back to it in a better way. And Jesus, I think, is asking us, what are you afraid of? Why are you afraid? He says also, your faith is limited. So it's interesting how he pairs fear with faith. Those two things are connected together in the way that Jesus is approaching the disciples. There is fear, but then there is faith. Faith is this beautiful gift that we have in believing in something that we might not even necessarily see or have fully understood or experiencing. And honestly, faith in this particular context is believing in God and God's promises. God doesn't promise that you won't have trouble. God doesn't promise that everything's going to be hokey-dory. Did I say that right? Okey-dokey. God doesn't say it's smooth sailing from this point forward, right? Because Jesus is in the boat. They're almost drowning, and Jesus is right in the middle of that. But the reality is, Jesus is right in the middle of everything else. And every brutal, awful, horrible storm, every threatening moment, Jesus is with us. I are not alone. Do you remember COVID? Anybody kind of, you know? I mean, I know it's so long ago and nothing really happened there. During COVID, a number of my colleagues and I, not necessarily with intention of doing it in a coordinated way, but a lot of us found ourselves using the phrase, faith over fear. You may have heard that. I don't know how that kind of played out here. I'm just still kind of learning, you know, things. Larry was part of it, and then Linda was part of that. But faith over fear, I think, is kind of a helpful. And we found ourselves, a lot of us, kind of saying that this is a scary time. You may remember how absolutely, you may want to forget, why is he bringing this up? We don't want to hear this, Bert. But it was hard because it was so dangerous, and fear was natural to it. Now, at that time, you would have probably thought or felt or said, this is going to kill me, or this is going to kill my loved one. And you may have had people in your life, in your orbit, which did succumb to that. Or certainly, you know, if they didn't die, they may become very ill long term. People in my life like that. Okay. But the challenge in the midst of that was to say, this is not the last word. And God has not turned God's back on us. Could you have believed that you would be sitting in a room like you are right now? Do you remember that? Like, oh, we'll never go to church again. It's TV church for the rest of our lives, you know. Actually, that, you know, just that opened up so many beautiful and good things. But it also was a reminder that, you know, we have someone who is with us even in the midst of that, even as we developed vaccines, even as we came to a place in our country where we figured out how to live with those things while we tore each other apart. Faith over fear. For Jesus, faith is a better antonym to fear than courage or confidence. For Jesus, he says, there is something more here. Trust me. Believe me. And I'm with you, even if you are limited in your faith, even if you are a big goofball. Hebrews 11 says, faith is the reality of things hoped for, proof of what we do not see, right? It works that way, that we trust God and we trust in God's promises, even in the storms, even when we cannot logically, you know, cognitively, emotionally resolve what is happening in the midst of those things. I'm looking at the time. I want to, you know, kind of just honor your time, but I need to tell you a couple of things. Can I just continue on? I know, I just ask you, let the preacher be long-winded. Faith over fear is a pivot, and I know that. It is a place of taking what seems to be very threatening and what your experience in your body is telling you and saying, you know what, I'm going to deal with this in a different way. In the spring of 2021, I began a journey of having problems with my heart. I learned in the midst of that I had heart disease. The way I learned it is I had a heart attack. And I had to make sense of a lot of things. I'd actually kind of suppressed a lot of things and ignored a lot of things. Oh, I'm fine. I'm good. People do this, by the way. You probably have never done that yourself. But I began that journey, and I had incredible care. And I was gifted with, a lot of really good people that were on my team, my support system. I had an excellent cardiologist. I did cardiac rehab. I worked through those things, and I had setbacks, of course. I had setbacks, but I also, experienced a remarkable journey. I'm not going to go into all the details of that, but I want you to know that at the beginning of it, I thought, this is it, I'm done. I had reason to think that. I mean, wouldn't you? But I just saw my cardiologist a couple weeks ago. She walked into the office, in the exam room. She set down the chart. She had run some tests on me, and I'm like, oh, here we go. She ran some tests on me. She said, your heart has returned to normal functioning. Your heart has returned to normal functioning. Now, I was not expecting that. My daughter was with me. She yipped. And I know that it's a miracle. Some people don't have miracles that look like that. That's a complicated question, but I know that for me, that where I was and what I was dealing with and what I've been able to come through with very good care, with the miraculous work of medicine, with the miraculous work of prayer and a support system, with showing up and sweating through a treadmill every few days, That's a miracle. But it was one that went beyond what fear was telling me to expect. And here I am. So what does this mean? It means, one thing it means is that pastors are human beings. Right? I wasn't, built out of parts that they had left over. Human being, human heart. I worked with the same biology that you do, right? So, I'm a person, and I'm working through that. Now, I'm not telling you something that you don't already know, right? I mean, the loss of pastors that you've experienced here is enormous, and how that you've had to kind of work through the trauma of that. And that trauma lives, I hear that. One of the things that, in the very careful conversations about the potential of me coming here, that I came to understand was that you guys had some healing to do. And so do I. My desire, my work here, in part, is to be part of your healing as much as you are part of mine. What this also means is that I kind of step into a situation where there are a lot of us in this room. I know that statistically, there are a lot of people that are in this room that are dealing with stuff, dealing with cardiac stuff. And if it's not cardiac, it's cancer or some other just, terrible kind of biological course of life, right? That we are not alone. And we are not alone. Why did I repeat that? Because I have to come back to the idea that I've been trying to offer to you. Christ, God, the Spirit, does not abandon us. That as we are in those storms that we find ourselves, God's right there. And we can trust in that presence, and we can trust Him to keep His promises. Now, we can spend a long time talking about promises. I might spend a few years talking to you about that. Really like to do that. The pivot of faith over fear the pivot of understanding that you are not alone, and you're not reduced by your diagnosis, whatever your diagnosis would happen to be, that you are more precious to God in the midst of that storm than you may ever know. So it's my joy to be here with you and to love and live abundantly with you. And I invite you to this in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen.